Thank you. I was born in Harlem, Harlem Hospital, you know, and we grew up. First house I remember was on Park Avenue, which is not the American Park Avenue, or maybe it is the American Park Avenue.
Uptown
Park Avenue, where the railroad tracks are. And we used to play on the roof and in the, I can't call it an alley, but near the river. It was kind of dump, garbage dump. And that was the first, those were the first scenes I remember. I remember my father had trouble keeping us alive. There were nine of us. And I was the oldest, so I took care of the kids. And talked to Daddy. Might have sounded much better now. All of his papa wants to couldn't feed his kid. But I was a kid and I didn't know that. And he was very religious, very rigid. He kept us together, I must say. And when I look back on it, after it was nearly 40 years ago that I was born, I think back on my growing up. And walk 13 blocks today because it's still there. And think of the kids on that block now. I'm aware that something terrible has happened, which is very hard to describe. I am, in all but no technical legal fact, a southerner. My father was born in the South. No, my mother was born in the South. And if they had waited, you know, two more seconds, I might have been born in the South. But that means that I was raised by a family whose roots were essentially rural and
southern
rural. And whose relationship to the church was very direct, because it was the only means they had of expressing their pain and their despair. But 20 years later, the moral authority, which was present in the Negro northern community when I was growing up, has vanished. And people talk about progress, and I look at Harlem, which I really know. I know it like I know my hand. And it is much worse there today than it was when I was growing up.
Would you say this is true of the schools too?
It's much worse than schools.
What school did you go to?
I went to PS 24. Went to PS 439.
We are another fellow alumni of 139.
And I didn't like a lot of my teachers. I had a couple of teachers who were very nice to me. One was a Negro teacher. And I remember, you asking these questions, so I'm trying to answer you. I remember coming home from school, and guess how young I must have been. And my mother asked me if my teacher was colored or white. And I said she was a little bit colored, a little bit white. Because she was my mother. And as a matter of fact, I was right. That's part of the dilemma of being an American Negro. That one is a little bit colored and a little bit white. And not only in terms of physical terms, but in the head and in the heart. There are days, one of them, when you wonder what your role is in this country and what your future is in it. How precisely you're going to reconcile yourself to your situation here, and how you're going to communicate to the vast, heedless, unthinking, cruel white majority that you are here. And to be here means that you can't be anywhere else. I'm terrified at the moral apathy, the death of the heart, which is happening in my country. These people have deluded themselves for so long that they really don't think I'm human. I have basis on their conduct, not on what they say. And this means that they have become, in themselves, moral monsters.
But, you know, I can see...
It's a terrible indictment.
Yes.
I mean every word I say.
Thank you.
pictures of dogs in the hands of human beings attacking other human beings.
In a free country.
In a free country.
In the middle of the 20th century.
This Birmingham, clearly not restricted to Birmingham, as you so eloquently pointed out. What do you think can be done to change, to use your term, the moral fiber of America?
Of this country on the spot. One has got to force somehow from Washington a moral commitment not to the Negro people but to the life of this country. It doesn't matter any longer, and I'm speaking for myself, Jimmy Baldwin, and I think I'm speaking for a great many other Negroes too. The problem now is, how are you going to save yourselves?
Rhizomes from Diatom Ribbons. Chris Davis is a release from 2019 featuring shredding Niels Klein at the guitar, Chet Smith at the vibraphone, Trevor Dunn at electric bass, Val Genti at the turntable, Terry Lynn Carrington at the drums, and Chris Davis, of course, leading the project from the piano. Again, Rhizomes from Diatom Ribbons, released on the Pyroclastic recording label. Prior to that, Matt Mitchell, Kate Gentile, their brand new release entitled Snark Horse, just out on the Pi recording label, six disc set, featuring an expanding and retracting ensemble. We were down to a quartet for that piece, Feral Pineals. Kate Gentile, of course, drums and percussion. Matt Mitchell at keyboards, both of them providing compositions. Kim Cass was heard at acoustic electroacoustic bass on that. And Brandon Seabrook at the guitar. Snark Horse out on Pi Recordings. Just a magnificent array of music indeed. Prior to that, brand new release from a project, Vernacular, the release, The Little Bird, just released on Astral Spirits Recording. We heard Memphis' first song. It was recorded about 4 years ago and featured Lawrence Daniel Caswell at the bass, Chris Culker at the drums and guitar, and R.A. Washington at trumpet and percussion. Again, they call themselves Vernacular. The Little Bird is the new release out on Astral Spirits. Prior to that, another selection from Migration of Silence, William Parker's box set. We heard from Volume 3, The Majesty of Jaw, and a piece entitled Baldwin. Eileen Christie was featured at voice and also did all the sampling and sonic collage and production. Jalalu Calvert Nelson was heard at the trumpet and William Parker at bass, Dosigoni and percussion. Prior to that, Wadada Leo Smith, Bill Laswell, and Milford Graves from their box set, Sacred Ceremonies, and a piece entitled Social Justice, A Fire for Reimagining. Just released, in the spring, let's say, on the Tum recording label. The Walls Must Tumble Down was the name of the piece prior to that, taken from William Parker and the second of two brand new releases from him in a trio setting. This one, Mayan Space Station, and it features Eva Mendoza at electric guitar, Gerald Cleaver at the drums, and William Parker at bass and compositions. Prior to that, a solo piece from Jessica Ackerley from her release, Morning, released on the Cacophonous Revival imprint, and a piece entitled Much Gratitude to You for You. And Mark Rebo and Ceramic Dog, as I mentioned, started off that set with The Long Goodbye from Hope, just out recently on the Northern Spy recording label. This is Jazz Amok. My name is John B. You can find all the information on music played here on the program at jazzamok.blogspot.ca. To close for this morning, some positivity. The Blue Reality Quartet, self-titled release, features two woodwind players alongside two percussionists, namely Michael Marcus and Joe McPhee at the woodwinds, Jay Rosen and Warren Smith at percussion. They have a brand new self-titled release out on the Mahakala recording label. And this is the piece, Love Exists Everywhere. We'll leave you with that. Bid you a good week and hope to see you here next week for another edition of Jazz Amok. Keep it locked, 90.3 FM, CKUT in Montreal. Thank you.
Welcome to Legalese, a broadcast about law cast broadly. Bienvenue à Legalese, une émission consacrée à droit qui vise à rendre le jargon plus accessible tout en évaluant de manière critique ses institutions. I'm Christoph, your host for this month's edition of Legalese. Today on the show, we'll be hearing the third episode in a three-part series about the justice system's harmful response to homelessness. These episodes were put together by some of our peers at Radlaw McGill and the Student Legal Clinic for Resilience Montreal. In this third episode, we'll hear how unhoused people are particularly at risk of being stopped and fined for offenses created by the municipal government and are disproportionately ticketed for bylaw infractions. The focus on today's episode is all about reforms and ways we can dismantle bylaws and policies that penalize homelessness and lead to discriminatory treatment and profiling of unhoused Montrealers. We will hear from Marie-Yves Sylvestre, one of the leading scholars on the judicialization of homelessness, and will speak with Balarama Holness and Martine Museau-Mulli, who are running for municipal office in November, to hear about the types of concrete actions they would push for to address this issue if elected. With that, here are the co-producers of the third episode of the series, Emily Knox and Maya Gunnarsson.
Montreal has lots of bylaws that govern the use of public spaces and prohibit a long list of behaviors like loitering, being in a park overnight, consuming alcohol on public property, or sleeping in metro